Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we will open our show with the latest updates on Hurricane Hilary, which was Tropical Storm Hilary by the time it slammed into the San Diego region. Just how wet and wild was it? We'll tell you on today's show. We'll also have the latest updates post-storm from the county and the city of San Diego. We'll also tell you about a warning issued for people living downstream from Loveland Dam, as well as why the city of San Diego is releasing water from the El Capitan Dam in Lakeside. Then on Green Scene, learn why a court has blocked the expansion of Campo Wind, for now, over aviation concerns. On Crime Beat, hear about a frightening series of attempted break-ins and kidnappings in El Cajon, and a suspect now in custody. A new bloodhound has joined the sheriff's search and rescue team, and we'll have details on the trail today. Lemon Grove's famous historical murals have been restored. We'll tell you why on today's show. Then on Destination East County, hear about all the most fun festivals and events coming up across our inland region, from powwows to concerts and much more. From Public News Service, we'll have some national news headlines, including the latest on the GOP debate and the Democratic presidential primaries, as well as an update on artificial intelligence and how that's impacting the advertising biz. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs from San Diego is speaking out on a court ruling that could result in severely restricting access to an abortion drug, even in states like California, where abortion remains legal. On the Sounds of History, we'll bring you back to Hurricane Kathleen, which struck the San Diego region as a tropical cyclone back in 1976, causing even more damage right here in San Diego's East County. Then we'll take you on the road to the old Campo Stone Store, one of our region's signature landmarks. And finally, as we enter fire season, we'll have some wildfire safety tips for you on our show today. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Tropical Storm Hilary has moved northeast out of San Diego County. The storm brought high winds and heavy drenchings to some local communities, while others had only moderate rainfall. The storm created spectacular lightning storms across East County and sent giant boulders tumbling onto Interstate 8 at Inkopah, where travel on Monday remains restricted to one lane with long delays heading from San Diego into Imperial County. The other major highway from Southern California to Arizona, Interstate 10, is closed due to flooding. The storm also caused delays of at least 73 flights and halted train service, compounding headaches for travelers. Prompted evacuation of the entire town of Ocotillo in Imperial Valley due to flooding. According to the National Weather Service, the strongest winds locally occurred on Black Mountain, where gusts up to 84 miles an hour were recorded, that is, hurricane force. Palomar Mountain recorded a 79-mile-per-hour gust, while Santa Isabel, Hellhole Canyon, and Still Hill in Descanso all had 70-mile-an-hour gusts or more. Potrero had winds roaring at 65 miles an hour. Mount Laguna and Pine Valley reached 63 and 62, respectively. Ranchita, 52, Borrego, 49, and Julian, 47 miles an hour. Even downtown San Diego recorded 44-mile-an-hour gusts at Petco Park, where Sunday's Padre game was canceled due to the storm. Instead, they played a doubleheader on Saturday. Some parts of Southern California, such as Mount San Jacinto, had nearly a foot of rain. In San Diego, Ranchita and Mount Laguna each got over 7 inches on Sunday, while Palomar Mountain had 6.8 inches. La Mesa had just over 2 inches of rain, but it was enough to cause flooding on Alvarado Road. Floodwaters at the El Cajon Trolley Station briefly shut down trolley service. State Route 94 in Spring Valley also had flooding. Some areas had power outages for up to several hours. Hilary peaked as a Category 4 hurricane in Mexico, with wind speeds of 145 miles an hour, causing substantial damage and at least one death south of the border. Massive storm caused damage across a widespread swath in the United States, too. It caused streets to flood in Las Vegas and Palm Springs. left Dodger Stadium surrounded by a moat, prompted evacuation of the entire town of Ocotillo in Imperial Valley due to flooding, and broke a dock at Lake Mead in Arizona, causing boats to drift out onto the lake. Governor Gavin Newsom has declared a statewide emergency and deployed the National Guard in advance of the storm. San Diego County has issued an emergency declaration, and the San Diego City Council plans an emergency session to consider declaring its own emergency. The Biden administration has authorized FEMA to assist Californians who suffered property damage from Tropical Storm Hillary. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
I'm Jonathan Goetz with an update from the County of San Diego Communications Office. County Board Chairwoman Nora Vargas, City of San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria, emergency services officials, and others said Monday that significant preparations and the willingness of the public to heed warnings, stay home, and off the roads helped reduce the impact of Tropical Cyclone Hillary. Chairwoman Vargas said, "I want to thank the public. You listened to the warnings. You prepared. You stayed off the roads. You helped us keep our residents safe, and we are grateful." Officials and media gathered at the county's Emergency Operations Center Monday morning for an update on the storm. The state of California, the county and cities of San Diego, Chula Vista, and San Marcos, and two tribal nations, the La Jolla Band of Los Sueños Indians and the Los Coyotes Band of Cahuilla Mission Indians, all proclaimed states of emergency as the storm was forming over the weekend. Weather forecasters predicted record rains and winds to hit all of Southern California and parts of the Southwest. At Monday's press conference, officials said there were no reported major catastrophes or damage to infrastructure in the county. Part of the reason for that, officials said, was the impressive collective preparation by the county, local cities, and the public. Vargas said that although county public works crews work year-round to keep culverts and road drainage clear, they also worked hard as the storm approached to double-check those systems. The county also sent numerous notifications to the public from its Emergency Operations Center by emails, a wireless emergency alert notification Saturday afternoon, and by emergency updates and public notifications on its alertsandiego.org website. The site includes information about emergency preparedness, response, and recovery. The County of San Diego alone distributed more than 100,000 sandbags to help the public prepare and defend their properties. The county worked with the American Red Cross of San Diego and Imperial Counties to open two overnight shelters Saturday at the Corky Smith Gymnasium in San Marcos and Southwestern College's Jaguar Aquatics Wellness and Sports. For additional information about emergency preparedness, visit alertsandiego.org.
Warning letters were sent by Sweetwater Water Authority to residents downstream from Loveland Reservoir in Alpine in anticipation of unplanned water releases or spills due to the anticipated heavy rains from Tropical Storm Hillary. The district warned that potential unplanned water release, together with expected abundant storm runoff, could cause flooding downstream. Residents were urged to relocate livestock, equipment, and materials out of the floodway. The district warned that flooding could continue even after Monday when rains have ended due to storm runoff into the river. Despite this, Sweetwater Authority says on its website, the dam at Loveland is structurally sound and there is no dam safety concern. Overflows of Loveland Reservoir are not uncommon in wet years, with the last unplanned water release of Loveland Dam occurring from late 2011 through early 2012. The district adds that its staff is working closely with local and state agencies to monitor the situation and will update the agency's website at sweetwater.org if any more information becomes available. The message concludes, area residents should also be sure to follow any additional instructions from local authorities as conditions may change. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. The City of San Diego on Sunday began releasing water from the El Capitan Reservoir in Lakeside in anticipation of a potential spill due to Tropical Storm Hillary. El Capitan is an aging dam made of rocks built in 1934. The dam is 237 feet tall and 1,170 feet wide, but it no longer meets state standards. The aging dam is considered in poor condition and, according to the state, would pose a high risk of loss of life downstream if it were kept full and should rupture. Last year, NPR reported that the El Capitan Dam is capable of storing over 36 billion gallons of water. That's enough to supply every resident in San Diego for most of a year. But it's been kept three-quarters empty intentionally low because of concerns that it could fail under the strain of too much water. So ironically, though California in many years is prone to drought, lack of investment to repair El Capitan Dam means the heaviest rain in years during this storm will be largely wasted, released to flow into the San Diego River and ultimately out to sea. Republican State Senator Brian Jones, whose district includes the El Capitan Dam, has stated, "We need to start spending the money on them to retrofit them, to get them up again back to full capacity," NPR reported last year. But despite a major infrastructure bill passed by Congress and signed into law by Democratic President Joe Biden, Republican Congressman Daryl Issa voted against the infrastructure bill and did nothing to put in any requests to fund repair of the dangerous dam in his district. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is John Tidwell with a Green Scene Report. The Campo Wind Expansion Project is on hold now to allow for an environmental group to raise concerns over potential aviation hazards. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals vacated as arbitrary and capricious the Federal Aviation Administration's denial of a petition by the group, Backcountry Against Dumps. The Backcountry group had sought discretionary review of a plan by TerraGen Development Company to construct 72 wind turbines up to 586 feet tall on the crest of the Coast Mountain Range on the Campo Reservation. The turbines would be roughly twice the height of the Statue of Liberty and located within the principal aviation corridor between San Diego and Yuma, Arizona. Backcountry's petition recognized the vital need for renewable energy to counter climate change, but pointed out that public and environmental safety must also be factored into project reviews. It cited documentation showing the turbines would pose collision hazards to fixed-wing and rotary aircraft, impair radar function, and potentially trigger greenhouse gas-emitting wildfires due to wind-induced sparking of power lines, lightning strikes, and overheating of rotors. Backcountry also documented potential for the turbines to impede aerial firefighting. A study led by researchers at UCLA, published in the journal Environmental Pollution, confirmed that California's 2020 wildfires emitted 127 million metric tons of CO2, roughly double the 65 million metric ton reduction in greenhouse gas emissions from renewable energy programs in California for the 17 years between 2003 through 2019. Many of those fires were caused by power lines. So ironically, a project intended to reduce greenhouse gas emissions might instead increase them if it sparks wildfires or impedes firefighting, allowing small fires to become firestorms. Backcountry submitted photos of low-flying aircraft directly above a ridgeline where the wind project will be built, including aircraft flying well below the height of the proposed turbines. Stating that the case has exceptionally high public importance, the court's ruling holds that the FAA has a duty to provide notice of its aeronautical study to interested organizations, including Backcountry, so that they can comment on the project's impacts on air navigation and petition for discretionary review of the FAA's earlier determination that Campo Wind would pose no hazards to air navigation. The court agreed with Backcountry that clean energy must proceed in a manner that accounts for the safety of aircrafts flying near the turbines. The court rejected each of the FAA's justifications for not providing notice to Backcountry and refusing to accept its petition for review, despite Backcountry's obvious direct interest in the safety of this project and its submission of a previous petition that led to vacating the project's original aeronautical study, reasoning that Backcountry is clearly an interested party entitled to individualized notice under the FAA's governing order. The court ruled that mere circulation of the aeronautical study via public notice on the FAA's website without notifying Backcountry was not sufficient to satisfy the FAA's regulatory obligation. Backcountry Against Dumps is a nonprofit founded to fight against a dump site proposed in Campo, an effort that proved successful. Since then, it has worked to protect communities against other negative environmental impacts. Backcountry Against Dumps president, Donna Tisdale, praises the court for ruling wisely, adding the FAA ignored the threat these enormous towers pose to the many low-flying aircraft that utilize this airspace, and the consequences of a wildfire in this extreme fire danger zone. Backcountry's attorney, Stefan Volker, agreed. He concludes, by requiring the FAA to abide by its own public participation rules, the court has sent a strong message that agencies are not above the law.
The city of El Cajon is considering an expansive new farmers market called Downtown Market Nights. If approved, it would be larger in scope than other farmers markets across the county. At the city council meeting in early August, the city's marketing and engagement manager, Chris Berg, gave a presentation on the proposed market, which could include not only farmers, fresh flowers, and artisan foods, but also a beer garden, three concert stages with live music, including bands with local followings, as well as barbecues and East County restaurants serving up foods for visitors to savor. Several streets would be shut down to traffic weekly for the event, which would have separate areas for foods and artisans as well as local bands, bringing not only shoppers but those seeking to enjoy nightlife in downtown El Cajon. Berg says it's a fun way to bring a lot of activity to downtown and elevate our downtown. He showed examples of other cities, such as San Luis Obispo, which has a similar marketplace with weekly street closures, drawing 6,000 visitors in peak months and attracting people from neighboring communities. Another example is the 626 Night Market. That's an Asian-themed market in Arcadia in northeast L.A., which has been around for over a decade and even has a traveling roadshow. The third example is Oceanside's Sunset Market, which started in 2007. Berg said he lived in Oceanside at the time and saw a positive transition, as this and other events helped bring in better businesses to redevelop that community. For the proposed El Cajon event, Berg recommends Thursday nights to minimize conflicts with other farmers' markets and the city's existing car shows and outdoor concerts. East County Market Nights could attract 275,000 community members from El Cajon and neighboring cities. It would run from April through October from 5 to 9 p.m. The city council members voiced excitement about the proposal. Councilmember Michelle Metchell called it wonderful and something that we need. She approved of going big. Councilmember Steve Goble said this is what we've been working on for years to get more people into downtown. And Councilman Phil Ortiz called the idea fantastic, noting that El Cajon's downtown has many areas to accommodate large events that most other East County cities lack. City Manager Graham Mitchell said staff will bring back a formal package later for the council to approve in the near future. Reporting for East County Magazine from El Cajon, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
I'm Jonathan Getz with a Crime Beat report. El Cajon police have arrested a homeless man who is charged with several felony counts, including kidnapping with intent to commit rape and burglary. On the evening of August 19th, officers responded to 911 calls reporting attempted break-ins at homes in the 800 block of Elizabeth Way. The suspect, 30-year-old Dominic Medlock of San Francisco, fled from officers but was caught and detained. Officers found three different female victims who all reported similar encounters. They told police that the suspect grabbed them and tried to force his way into their homes, punching one woman in the neck. He then entered a fourth residence where a father was home with his children. The father defended his children and chased the suspect off with a wooden rod, says Lieutenant MacArthur. Anyone with additional information regarding this incident is encouraged to contact the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311. Individuals with information who wish to remain anonymous can call the Crime Stoppers tip line at 888-580-8477.
This is John Tidwell with a business report from El Cajon. Plans to build an Amazon distribution center in El Cajon fell through. Now, a different major project has broken ground on the site at the corner of Cuyamaca and Weld in El Cajon, a 386,000-square-foot industrial complex slated to become a hub for multiple companies in different industries. The city of El Cajon states on Facebook that this project is posted to usher in a new era of economic growth and opportunities, including creation of numerous jobs that will benefit residents of El Cajon and surrounding areas. At the heart of this development is expansion of GKN Aerospace, a company that the city says epitomizes El Cajon's rising stature in the global business landscape. According to GKN's website, the company is the world's leading multi-technology Tier 1 aerospace supplier with 38 manufacturing facilities in 12 countries, serving over 90% of the world's aircraft and engine manufacturers. The company designs and manufactures smart aerospace systems and components used in aircraft ranging from passenger planes to fighter jets. The shell of the building is scheduled to be erected later this year, with the office building set to be completed between March and June next year. Chestnut Properties, the property management company overseeing the project, indicates that other tenants will also lease part of the space. The city concludes ambitiously in its social media posts, "It's clear that the corner of Cuyamaca and Weld is poised to become a nexus of innovation, growth, and prosperity. The evolving development marked by GKN Aerospace's expansion and its impact on the aerospace industry heralds a bright future for El Cajon and its residents."
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The first bloodhound for the San Diego County Sheriff's Department is now on duty. Albert joined the department in January of 2022 as a 13-week-old puppy. After over a year of training, he's now serving our communities as part of the Sheriff's Search and Rescue, or SAR, canine unit. His special mission is to help find missing and at-risk people. Albert graduated from training at the end of March and got his badge from Sheriff Kelly Martinez. He was donated to the Sheriff's Department by the Honorary Deputy Sheriff's Association. The bloodhound is named in memory of Sergeant Don Albert Parker, a 25-year veteran of the Sheriff's Department who served as the unit's leader of SAR for 9 years. He led the search for many high-profile cases that generated national and international attention before dying of brain cancer in 2018. Albert and his handler, SAR Canine Unit Leader Pam Medhurst, are members of the National Police Bloodhound Association. The group is comprised solely of sworn members of law enforcement. They made an exception for Medhurst because of her 24 years of volunteer service and expertise in search and rescue. That makes Medhurst and Albert the only citizen volunteer members in that association. Albert is one of 18 dogs in the Sheriff's Search and Rescue, which is an all-volunteer unit with about 150 human volunteers. Together, they perform wilderness and urban rescues and search for missing people. Teams are available 24 hours a day to respond to local, state, and federal agency requests. They also help the Sheriff's Department with evacuations during wildfires, flash floods, and other natural disasters. Reporting on the trail for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show. And now, it's time for the Sounds of History.
This is John Tidwell, bringing you the Sounds of History. Lemon Grove's famous murals have been restored. The murals were removed from the side of the former Grove Pastry Shop building on Main Street during renovations by the building's new owners, who planned to open a new restaurant, the Lemon Grove Bistro, in late summer or early fall. The building has a long history in the heart of Lemon Grove. The owners of the bistro, Frederick and Catherine Selchow, were required to put in a sidewalk as part of the city's permitting process, so the historical murals on the south side of the building were partially removed and stored temporarily. The murals were reinstalled on July 22nd by the Lemon Grove Historical Society after the sidewalk was complete. Helen Ofield, former Lemon Grove Historical Society president, shared the history of the award-winning murals. Painted by artist Kathy Strzelecki and Jan Lavalle between 2005 and 2013, the murals depict the story of Lemon Grove in an epic 5 sections measuring 65 feet long by 18 feet high. The 5 murals each show a time period in Lemon Grove's history. They are titled The World of the Kumeyaay Nation, The Spanish Conquest, The Mexican Empire, The Birth of Lemon Grove, and Modern Lemon Grove. One of the most well-known parts of Lemon Grove's history is the very first school segregation case heard in the U.S. The Modern Lemon Grove mural includes a portrait of Don Roberto Alvarez, Sr., who, at age 12, represented Mexican-American students in a successful desegregation case against the Lemon Grove School Board. Ofield, the instigator of the mural, says she is grateful to the artists, supporters, and Historical Society board members for their unwavering faith in the power of history and its many lessons.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Over the coming year, about 2.3 million Californians, 1 million of them children, are expected to lose Medi-Cal, which is health insurance coverage for low-income families, as the state redetermines all enrollees' eligibility after the pandemic. In June alone, 225,000 people were disenrolled from the program, including 64,000 kids, and an estimated 89% of those people still qualify financially. Joan Alker with the Center for Children and Families at Georgetown University explains that many families have either moved and haven't received the renewal letters, or they're having trouble with the paperwork.
It's very complicated understanding some of these notices that families are getting. Families try to call the call center and they can't get through. And unfortunately, often the burden is falling on families to really try to push through this process.
Confusion is rampant because the system does not issue receipts that prove documents have been received or notify people that their packets are being processed. Help is available on the State Department of Healthcare Services website, keepmedicalcoverage.org, and on the Children's Partnership website, allinforhealth.org. About 15 million Californians, including 5.7 million children, are enrolled in Medi-Cal. Kristen Golden-Testa with the Children's Partnership says families need to be proactive.
One, make sure your county has your up-to-date contact information. Two, be on the lookout in the mail for a yellow envelope, which is saying you need to renew and here's what you need to fill out and send it back in.
Liza Davis, also with the Children's Partnership, notes that Medi-Cal eligibility also determines a variety of benefits for kids at school.
It's really greater than just losing your Medi-Cal and then having to renew and having to delay an appointment. No, it's pretty consequential because there's a ripple effect and there's so many things that are connected to your Medi-Cal enrollment.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part 2 of the East County Magazine radio show.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host,
Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
I'm Jonathan Getz with this week's Destination East County. As summer draws to a close and autumn fast approaches, some of East County's most anticipated events of the year are coming up, including X-Fest in Santee, the Barona and Saquon powwows, and the Borrego Days Desert Festival. There are also attractions on stage indoors, including Crystal Gale in concert and comic Paula Poundstone performing. So stay tuned for details on all of these events. East County is hosting its first ever X-Fest, full of extreme sport events, local vendors, superstar athletes, music, guest speakers, testimonies, entertainment, and tons of giveaways. It's hosted by Pathways Community Church in Santee on Saturday, August 26th from 3 to 9 p.m. East County X-Fest will also feature several car shows, motorcycle shows, and local artist galleries. For information, visit pathways.cc/X-Fest. For more than half a century, the Barona Band of Mission Indians has been hosting its powwow, a traditional gathering attracting Native American tribal members from across North America. The 51st annual Barona Powwow features competitions in tribal dancing and drumming. It will be held September 1st through 3rd on the Barona Reservation at the Barona Sports Complex, located at 1095 Barona Road in Lakeside. The event also includes vendors with Native American crafts, clothing, jewelry, artwork, and more, as well as food and beverages available for purchase. Grand entry processionals will be held at 8 p.m. Friday and at both 2 and 8 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. For a full schedule of events, visit the Barona Powwow's Facebook page. The 2023 Saquon Powwow will be held September 8th through the 10th at the Saquon Resort in El Cajon. The annual celebration will feature tribal dancing contests each day, as well as bird singing competitions on September 9th. Other activities include peon games at dusk, traditional Native American arts and crafts vendors, and refreshments. For more information, visit the Saquon Powwow page on Facebook. Country music legend Crystal Gale will perform at Saquon's Live and Up Close Theater on Saturday, September 9th at 8 p.m. Gale was inducted into the Grand Ole Opry in 2017 by her sister, Loretta Lynn. Her signature songs include Don't It Make My Brown Eyes Blue, You've Been Talking in Your Sleep, When I Dream, Half the Way, and her duet with Eddie Rabbit, Just You and I. Gale was released over 20 number one hits and has been awarded numerous times by the Grammys, the Country Music Association, the Academy of Country Music, the American Music Awards, and the American Music Operators Association, and she has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. For tickets, visit saquon.com. Paula Poundstone will be performing at the Magnolia in El Cajon on Friday, September 29th at 6:30 p.m. The iconic comedian has starred in several HBO specials, hosts a weekly comedy podcast, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and is a panelist on NPR's comedy news quiz show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Poundstone was the first female comic to perform stand-up comedy at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Her HBO special, Cats, Cops, and Stuff, marked the first time a female comedian won Best Comedy Special in the Cable Ace Awards. For tickets, visit concerts.livenation.com. The 57th annual Borrego Days Desert Festival, produced by the Borrego Chamber of Commerce, will be held October 21st and 22nd at Christmas Circle Community Park in Borrego Springs. The festival includes live musical entertainment, art exhibits, a kids' zone, food vendors, artisans, a beer garden, a car show, and more. For details, visit borregodays.com. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. Next, we have some national news stories from Public News Service, and then we'll be back with more local coverage from East County Magazine.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
If the campaign is going to use artificial intelligence in its campaign ads, it ought to disclose in a very clear and concise language in the ad itself, this is entirely fabricated. This isn't real.
Craig Holman with a nonpartisan consumer group Public Citizen calls AI-generated campaign ads a threat to democracy. The Republican National Committee already put one on social media falsely depicting President Joe Biden. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis used another to attack former President Donald Trump in Iowa. The Federal Election Commission will decide on rules following a public comment period that ends October 16th. Former Vice President Mike Pence says he's ready for Wednesday's first Republican debate in Milwaukee, whether Trump is there or not.
One thing I realize about him is it's not over till it's over. So I'm actually still hoping he shows up.
Pence tells ABC everyone who qualifies should take part, but Trump has hinted he'll skip it and air a pre-recorded Tucker Carlson interview at the same time. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie calls that cowardly. Tennessee lawmakers are in special session today discussing a bill by Republican Governor Bill Lee to limit access to guns for at-risk individuals. Lee insists his proposal is not a red flag law, which state Republicans oppose.
It is important that we find a way to remove individuals who are a threat to themselves or to our society, to remove them from access to weapons.
A Nashville school shooting last spring left six people, including three children, dead. Three Democratic legislators faced calls for expulsion because they sided with gun control protests after the killings. Democrats in New Hampshire say President Biden's name might be off the ballot for next year's presidential primary and would have to be written in. Democratic Senator Maggie Hassan tells WBZ News that's because Biden and the National Party decided to allow South Carolina to hold its primary first.
New Hampshire law requires us to have the first in the nation primary, and we will continue to do that.
A recent poll found most Democratic primary voters back Biden, 10% favor environmental lawyer Robert F. Kennedy Jr. The state of Mississippi is appealing a federal appeals court ruling forcing the state to restore voting rights for people convicted of certain felonies. Attorney Jonathan Youngwood represents plaintiffs in the case.
It's about people who committed a crime, made a mistake, served their time, now they're back in society, they should be allowed to vote.
The court ruled denying their voting rights is a cruel and unusual punishment that violates the Eighth Amendment. According to the Sentencing Project, nearly 5 million Americans have been disenfranchised that way. And an abortion rights group in Nebraska aims to put the issue on the ballot in 2024. The state's 12-week abortion ban is set to go into effect in October. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The abortion drug mifepristone may soon be illegal nationwide in many circumstances, even in states where abortion remains legal. The FDA first approved the medication in 2000, then in 2016. and expanded its authorization to allow its use for up to 10 weeks of pregnancy. But now a three-judge panel on the conservative Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Louisiana has ruled that it was unlawful for the FDA to allow mifepristone to be used later in pregnancy or mailed directly to patients or prescribed by a medical professional other than a doctor. Two of those judges were appointed by Donald Trump. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs denounced the court's ruling. Times of San Diego reports. Jacobs says, right-wing Republicans know they can't win at the ballot box, so they've chosen to weaponize the courts and ignore decades of precedent and science to enact their dystopian anti-abortion agenda. The San Diego Democrat adds, while mifepristone remains safe, effective, and for now widely available, this is the latest gross attack on our bodies and our freedom. We won't stop fighting for our fundamental rights and for abortion access to be legal, affordable, accessible, and stigma-free for everyone. The judges in Louisiana were reviewing an order in April by a Texas judge to completely ban use of mifepristone pending appeal, an order which the Texas judge said he would likely make permanent. Neither the Texas nor the Louisiana ruling will take effect until the Supreme Court reviews them, which could occur in its upcoming term from October to June. But with the High Court's conservative majority, it appears likely that women's access to mifepristone could soon be restricted nationwide or even banned after the justices issue a ruling. California has been buying up supplies of the drug in case it is ultimately banned. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting the Sounds of History on East County Magazine show on KNSJ. Now, if you think this week's storms were severe, just listen to this. Back in 1976, Hurricane Kathleen struck our region, the most powerful tropical cyclone ever to hit San Diego and Imperial counties. With winds up to 90 miles an hour, Hurricane Kathleen dropped a foot of water on Mount Laguna and sent a wall of water 10 feet high and 40 feet wide rushing through the town of Ocotillo in neighboring Imperial Valley, destroying over 70% of the town. Another wave a mile high and 2.5 feet wide swept through Jacumba, demolishing a farmhouse there. The San Diego Union-Tribune said of the Ocotillo nightmare, there was no warning, just a sudden roar. The powerful storm killed 13 people in California and Mexico. It also washed out Interstate 8, crumbling the freeway and destroying a bridge at Meyer Creek, where a 600-foot-wide section of the freeway was wiped out, leaving a gully in its place about 40 feet deep. Eldo Sanders jumped in his truck to try and save people stranded in Painted Gorge out in Imperial Valley after hearing a call for help on his Citizens Band radio. He never made it. His truck was found overturned in mud, and his body was later found buried in a mud bank. Another resident of Ocotillo, John Patrick Riley, refused to evacuate his home. Rescuers from the Ocotillo Volunteer Fire Department found the 63-year-old man's body inside his home, which had flooded. An El Centro resident, William Mina, is believed to have died when his vehicle was swept off the Meyer Creek Bridge on Interstate 8 by a towering wall of water. Flooding and mudslides destroyed three bridges on the San Diego-Arizona Eastern Railway, ultimately leading to abandonment of that railway line. It smashed airplanes at desert airports and turned one plane on its nose in Yuma. A Salton Sea Resort area, Bombay Beach, was completely underwater. Authorities began referring to it as a lake. Most of the 14 cities in Imperial County were utterly inundated. Sheriff's deputies and the Navy airlifted residents out of areas west of El Centro, including an elderly woman trapped when water overflowed her bed. She was saved by sheriff deputies in a flatboat. In San Diego, the storm shut down a Padres game. Out in Imperial Valley, farmers suffered when at least 10,000 acres of sugar beets were wiped out along with many other crops. All routes out of Imperial County except for State Route 111 were shut down all at one time. 80 families were left homeless in Mexicali, and roofs blew off homes 600 miles south of San Diego. Hundreds of homes were destroyed across the region by the powerful storm, which caused $160 million in damage, ranking as one of the worst storms in California history. Alan Zangheim grew up on a ranch in Imperial Valley, and he recalls the flash flood that raced across the desert floor on September 9, 1976. The next morning, he remembers going outside with his dad, believing that the storm had passed. And then, he writes on his website, "We kept noticing some sunlight reflecting off the San Diego Mountains out towards the west. It was like a sparkle. My dad thought it was peculiar, and he said it looks like water. And we listened to the radio shortly thereafter and heard the flash flood warnings. My mom was scared and pretty insistent that we vacate the ranch, and we did. We returned to find out the next morning that a wall of water approximately 10 feet high swept across the Imperial Valley desert floor, wiping out the town of Ocotillo and killing some motorists who were unfortunate enough to be on Interstate 8 at the time the water came through. When we returned to our ranch, it was under 3 feet of water, and my dad's crops were ruined. It was due to this catastrophic incident that we sold our ranch and moved to the San Diego area," Zangheim recalls. He warns that due to the unique geography of Ocotillo, which sits on an alluvial fan below sea level, the same unfortunate events could very well happen again. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The Biden administration's Inflation Reduction Act turns 1 year old today, directing $370 billion to clean energy efforts through tax incentives, grants, and loan guarantees. That public money has in turn spurred private investment to decarbonize the economy. Stefan Niccolo is an investor in the Full Cycle Fund, which finances climate-related projects.
This is a chance for us to level up our American economy. That multiplier effect is massive. Right? We're talking about millions of jobs that are now part of the clean energy future and allows us to think about a world where we are no longer reliant on fossil fuels.
Republican opponents of the Inflation Reduction Act have cited concerns about the deficit and the impact on jobs in the oil and gas sector. So far, private companies have announced plans for 96 gigawatts of clean power, enough for almost 20 million homes. U.S. battery manufacturers have ramped up projects that will support the production of 10 million electric vehicles per year. Megan Solly Wells is the former mayor of Culver City, who now serves as California director for the group Elected Officials to Protect America. She says this is a big opportunity to build offshore wind infrastructure coast to coast.
We're rewriting the energy paradigm from a paradigm that harmed communities into one that lifts us all up together.
Ahmad Zahra, who serves on the city council in Fullerton, says his city has invested in urban forestry and clean water and is helping to create a community choice energy agency for Orange County.
We were having a hard time finding the funding to really accelerate this type of investment. This Act is going to revolutionize all our policies on a local level because we will have now the funds to be able to provide the tools of investment.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Next up from County News Service, we're going to be hearing from Larry Johnson out at the old Campo Stone Store, one of East County's most unique and colorful historical landmarks.
If you're ever on Highway 94, about an hour east of San Diego, you might see this unique building.
Welcome to Historic Campo and the Gasco Brothers Stone Store Museum.
The Gasco Brothers built a fortress-like stone store in 1885. Previously, it was a wooden structure, the site of a famous shootout.
A group of bandits had been raiding down the coast of California, so gunfire started. And there was a big shootout. The guy that they had shot on the floor, one of the Gospel Brothers, didn't kill him. He jumped up, grabbed a shotgun, went out and shot people. And so they were shooting dead blank range around. And both Gospel Brothers were wounded. The locals were afraid of another raid. They couldn't get the military up here to guard and protect them. So they thought they needed a substantial building. So that's why they decided to build a building as thick as this and as strong as this. If you take a look around, if you come in, you'll see that the walls down here are about 4 foot thick. It's from stone that was quarried here on site by hand with hammer and drill and no backhoes or heavy lifting objects. It was manpower. It served as a store from 1885 until about 1927.
No longer a store, this building is now a museum, thanks to County Parks and the Mountain Empire Historical Society. Today, the store reflects the early life of the town of Campo.
When the Historical Society began, they tried to make it look a lot like it did in 1899, or when it was a store functioning to serve the local public. So they have gathered some of the food stuff, the tobaccos, the medical supplies, the ropes, the cans, anything that the ranchers needed. If they didn't have it, you didn't need it.
The building is filled with photos, books, artifacts from the Kumeyaay Indians who occupied the region prior to the settlers, and other rare items.
These shackles were found locally about 3 miles from here on a ranch in about 1885. A person who's bought the ranch found in the well the skeleton. On the skeleton, on the legs, were these shackles. They didn't know who the body was or who the skeleton was. It's still a mystery today. One of the interesting things about these shackles is they're blacksmith made. There's no lock to them. Once they were on, they were meant to stay.
Upstairs is an impressive exhibit dedicated to Campo's military history, including Camp Lockett.
Camp Lockett was started before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. I guess the military was anticipating that there was going to be a war, and they needed another base here, and they needed a base in this area because of the railroad, which was a key supply line. We had a long exposed border, and one of the things they were afraid of was that if the Japanese came into the war, they might invade Mexico and come into San Diego. So this was sort of a critical point, and so they started building Camp Lockett.
The 10th Cavalry is one you may have heard of.
The famed Buffalo Soldiers, white officers and then African-American enlisted troops. And they were stationed here, and they were guarding tunnels and railroad and the border. Very tough, very good soldiers.
The museum is open on weekends, making for a nice day trip to learn about our local pioneers.
They were entrepreneurs, every one of them. They were constantly trying to figure out how to make the best of what they had and where they were, and to make a living and to leave history and substantial items behind them so that descendants would have something to live and work on and hopefully try and take care of.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and KNSJ bringing you some special information as we enter fire season. How prepared are you for an emergency? Just as you change your smoke detector batteries whenever you change your clocks for daylight savings time, it's also a smart idea to check your emergency kit at the start of every fire season. That means now. Of course, emergencies such as an earthquake or a blackout can happen at any time with no advance warning. For households with children, elderly people, or those with limited mobility, being ready to take action is especially important. Updating your emergency list should start with a checklist. Did you add or lose any members of your household? Be sure to have enough supplies for everyone, including people and pets. Check the dates on canned goods and other perishables, and be sure that stored drinking water is still good. Create an emergency plan for your family. Identify two places for the family to meet. One should be somewhere outside your home, but close by, perhaps a neighbor's or a street corner. The other should be a spot away from your neighborhood, just in case the entire area is evacuated and you can't return. Using information from SDG&E and supplementing it with some additional tips, we've come up with the following helpful suggestions to be prepared. Practice an evacuation plan with your family, including children. If they get used to doing something when there is no panic, they will be much less frantic should a real disaster strike. Review emergency plans at your workplace, your child's school or daycare center, friends' homes, and other places where members of your family regularly spend time. Plan safe routes away from your home and business to high, safe ground, and be sure all family members know the routes. Have alternative routes in mind if the first option is blocked. Develop a plan for family pets and livestock, and have a backup plan because some evacuation shelters may not allow animals. Designate a friend or family member outside the area who all family members can call if you become separated, and that way you can know if everyone is safe. Have family members memorize that phone number in case cell phones die and you can't access the phone directory. Keep current important documents in a safe deposit box or send copies outside the area to be kept by a trusted relative or friend. Be sure that you can access your insurance policy and have a copy of your deed, for example. After Hurricane Katrina, when banks were destroyed by flooding and hurricanes, many homeowners had a lot of trouble putting in their insurance claims. Have a set place for your emergency supplies. Your emergency kit should include, at minimum, a 3-day supply of bottled water, 1 gallon per person per day, plus extra for pets or anyone with special needs, a 3-day supply of packaged, dried, and canned food that can be prepared without cooking, a first aid kit, and essential medicines for all family members, a pet carrier for each pet and pet food, a manual can opener, a portable radio, plenty of batteries, and flashlights kept in waterproof bags, an extra set of car keys, credit cards, and always plenty of cash in case the power is out when ATM machines and credit card machines are not working, special items for infants, elderly, or disabled family members. It's also important to make sure that you always keep plenty of gas in your car since pumps won't work when the power goes out. Also, be sure you have a car charger for your cell phones, since during a power outage, you don't want your cell phone to go dead. Car chargers are cheap, often less than $10, but can be crucial in an emergency. Know how to operate everything if the electricity is off, the keyless entry to your home, and an electric garage door and gates, for instance. Be sure you know how to open them manually. If you have a gas main, know how to shut it off in case of a leak or a disaster. Include instructions on how to shut off anything that's complicated in your family emergency kit. It's better to have supplies ready and never need them than to need them and not have them. SDG&E has also prepared some videos on fire season planning and general emergency preparedness that can be accessed in the Wildfire and Emergency section of our website at www.eastcountymagazine.org. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.